treasures of Russian poetry, and she is relatively unknown here, although her reputation is growing day by day. And she's somebody that is, well, she's just extraordinary. She's a real Renaissance woman. She is actually one of the most important and foremost translators of English poetry, children's poetry, children's literature, but also completely grown-up poetry. So she translated Chaucer's Troilus and Cressida when she was a relatively young translator. And yes, in more recent years, she's translated everyone from Shakespeare to John Donne to Irish poetry. And
to the Gruffalo.
To the Gruffalo, yes. The pinnacle of English literature. And on the way, an awful lot of English language children's poetry, A.A. Milne. I'm just trying to think if I've got a long list in my head.
James Reeves. Eleanor Fargen.
Eleanor Fargen. So all the big names, really. And she's also, so she translates, she also writes her own poetry for children, and some of her own poems in Russian for children, some of the sort of best loved poems for children in Russian contemporary literature. And Marina does huge tours around Russia, around, in fact, the whole former Soviet Union, doing readings to children, to schools, and you know, travelling for 8 hours on a plane to get to a Russian city to do a reading for children.
Not really eight. Well, six was my record six. Up to now.
Just think how far you'd go if you went.
I haven't
hours.
Been to Vladivostok yet.
I think that's threatening.
But Siberia is 6 hours away, give or take.
It's quite hard to explain, really, if you're in Britain. Quite the, you know, the size and scale, if you're a writer in Russian.
It's quite scary.
And your print runs as well. We can only be envious of the print runs that you have.
Not nowadays, but the ones we used to have under the Soviets, they were huge.
Mm-hmm. It's quite another poet. In fact, I think you're related, aren't you? A Russian poet called Larissa Miller, who wrote recently, did an interview for MPT a couple of years ago, made the point that in the Soviet period, the print runs were absolutely enormous, and there was very little freedom. Obviously, you had to sort of publish certain things in certain ways. And then there was something like a two-week period when the Soviet Union collapsed, but before the distribution collapsed, when you could publish anything you like and it would be distributed to everyone in the Soviet Union. And then the distribution fell apart and you could publish anything you like, but no one ever read it. So and we thought we'd have a sort of reading that would be quite informal, would have a discussion part to it. Marina would tell us all about Russian children's literature and what's going on in Russia at the moment around literature, which is really, really fascinating, the sort of political situation and the situation generally with writing. And then we'd move into readings of children's poems and hopefully finish with some of Marina's more grown-up poetry, because I see that actually it's not a children's audience, so...
No.
You'll enjoy reading the... Well, I mean, we were talking about this earlier. What is the difference between a children's poet and an adult poet? It seems like a slightly artificial difference. Mm-hmm. Shall we... what we started with was the idea of censorship in children's poetry, and Marina's wrote brilliantly on censorship for MPT, for this issue of Modern Poetry and Translation, and she did a sort of conversation with Michael Rosen, former children's poet, who talked about the kind of instrumentalisation of children's poetry in the British school curriculum. And Marina contributed to that conversation with a discussion of what was happening in Russian children's literature. And I think that might be the place to start, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk really at length, really, about some new laws which are being passed in Russia, which are just extraordinarily interesting because they have such impact on what children read.
Well, probably Kornei Chukovsky is the barometer or the litmus paper for it. Because, you know, in Kornei Chukovsky is the best known, best loved children's poet, not only children's, of course, but children's poet and translator in Russia. And he deserves all these titles and more, because they nicknamed him Grandfather Kornei. And it's true, he sort of, he takes a kid of two or three by the hand and leads him or her straight into the treasury, not of Russian, but of the world literature, because his poetry is full of English reminiscences, of Oscar Wilde, of irony and parody and the nursery rhymes and everything, and all the rhymes and rhythms a child will ever come across in his life. So this Kornei Chukovsky in 1922 was banned for being over religious and non-realistic. Tell us about the crocodile. Tell us about the crocodile, his most famous children's poem.
So Kornei Chukovsky wrote a poem called The Crocodile, a brilliant, brilliant poem. And in 1929, it was banned on the advice of the Kremlin Parents Committee.
Kremlin Parents Committee, very informal.
Which was led by Lenin's wife, Krupskaya, who was actually an educator, a famous educator. And Krupskaya said, this is quite funny, when you read the poem, it's quite a funny thing. She says that this is... I'll just read it to you, that Tchaikovsky's work didn't address social themes, and the children in his poems had neither social feeling nor desire to further the aims of the collective. She added that the work encouraged superstition, anxiety, and praised the petty bourgeois. And the famous poem, Crocodile, she said, gave an incorrect representation of the world of animals and insects.
Let's do a piece of the crocodile, Sasha, please.
Yeah. This
just a little piece. Shall I read it in the beginning in Russian?
Yes.
The beginning in Russian. It's a famous poem. Grown-ups loved it too. Жил-да-был крокодил. Он по улицам ходил, папиросы курил, по-турецки говорил. Крокодил, крокодил, крокодилович. And so on and so forth, changing rhythm, and the children would dance to it, really.
Mm-hmm. And this is how it begins. There was once a crocodile who would wander through the streets and smile, smoking all the while and speaking fluent Turkish. Oh, crocodile, Mr. C. Rocodile, Esquire.
Etc., so on and so forth. So the situation in the contemporary children's literature is such... that I'm afraid Grandfather Kornei is going to be banned on account of his lack of religious motives. Because the interference of the Russian Orthodox Church in everything, in education, in schools and kindergartens, is so aggressive now, that they form all sorts of parent committees, the Siberian Parent Committee, the Urals Parent Committee, the Committee of Orthodox Parents, of Concerned Orthodox Parents, or something like that. So I'm afraid they are going to ban Grandfather Kornei altogether. And our Duma is the parliament, is the Russian parliament. It's nicknamed Printer Gone Mad. I think these guys, they just wake up in the morning, scratch their heads, and ask themselves, what shall we ban today? Because every day they ban something new. Foreign adoption. Oh, yes, let's ban it. Now, etc. When it came to children's literature, they issued the famous federal law number 436, which bans anything... quote unquote, encouraging or, let me see, I have it somewhere here, propagating or encouraging behavior that can be harmful for a child or that отрицает, как бы,
denies
or that denies traditional family values. So, exit Huckleberry Finn. He led a hobo lifestyle, dangerous, you know, a dangerous vagabondish. Yeah, exit lots of classics.
Oliver Twist.
Exit Grandfather Dickens altogether. Well, actually, they are considered world classics, so it's not so easy with them. But any contemporary author who ever mentions that there can exist such a thing as a gay person in the world, the whole print of the book can be withdrawn. And there are age limitations all the time. And the small good small publishing houses are terrified, and they tend to put like 12 plus on a book, which ought to be labeled like 8 plus, or 16 plus on a book with a bit of human relationships in it, or such a thing as divorce, for instance. They shouldn't learn, they shouldn't know there is such a thing before they turn like 28 or something. Something. Well, this is a crazy situation, and the only kind of resistance we can think of is the grassroot kind of resistance. That is, we still go on writing what we can and publishing what we can and trying to work around the obstacles.
It's funny because one of the things that really characterizes Russian lawmaking, and it's really clever, is a sort of absurdity and abstraction to it, which means that you can't entirely predict if something is legal or illegal. So you are on the side of safety, and if you're a small publisher, you are on the side of safety and you don't publish it. So there's a very famous incident last year with a play that was called
The Soul of a Pillow.
It
was a kindergarten play, really. There were all sorts of pillows in kindergarten, but all the pillows were stuffed with down or something, the stuff that pillows are stuffed with, usually. And one pillow was stuffed with buckwheat husks.
Yes,
like that, you know, because the kid was allergic or something. Somebody thought it was a hint on a gay orientation, different sexual orientation.
This is really true. So
the pillow play got banned, and naturally all the authors who participated in the Moscow Book Fair, and the play was to be presented at the Moscow Book Fair, so everyone got offended, it just went away, and the book fair was disrupted. So this year, they didn't even allow the book fair at all. Actually, they never banned it. They said, this year is devoted to literature, and we in the Kremlin, we love literature. We'll hold the festival, but not in the cozy place where it used to be held next to the Tretyakov Art Gallery, etc. But we are going to hold it in the Red Square. And everyone has to be sorted through and filtered thoroughly because it's the Red Square, guys, etc. You know, never mind. We're still alive and kicking.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Russia's
incredibly, I mean, the lawmaking is this sort of absurdist approach, which is in everything, really, in Russia, that you have to work out whether what you're going to do would be wrong or not. And that also brings out a sort of huge spirit of what we were talking about with Marina, which is a sort of grassroots resistance. Mm-hmm. And that is really, really positive. And you had some sort of examples of what people were
doing. It's almost never possible in Russia to remove a stone from your way. You know, you always, almost always have to work around it. And these laws, they are deliberately fuzzy. They are written in a deliberately fuzzy way. Of course, they won't forbid Dickens. They are not crazy. Or Alice in Wonderland, you know, taking dangerous substances, you know, mushrooms, eating mushrooms, tasting crazy mushrooms, etc. But they won't forbid it. They don't want to look really funny. But they can ban and forbid any young author, for instance, like Daria Vilke, for instance. Never mind. So in such a fuzzy way that I've been telling Michael Rosen the other day that any Duma deputy who wants some PR to his name can raise a hand, stand up and say, like, I've been browsing around books in the children's section the other day and I saw this book by this chap, a foreigner, what's his name? Michael Rosen. And it was called Bear Hunt. And I think it propagates and encourages dangerous behavior, hunting wild animals. Yeah, let's ban it. That's it. Exit Michael Rosen, brilliantly translated into Russian.
It's a really, really sad situation, but I mean, it is also, there are so many people fighting against it, and I do feel that in some ways, and something I wanted to make really clear today is that we hear quite a lot in the press about Russia and about the kind of Putinization of Russia, which is all going on. It's not that it's not there, but there is also a real countering, and there are really, I mean, there's some extraordinary people in Russia who are actually great.
Don't believe it when they tell you 86% support Mr. Putin. It's a lie.
Yeah, it's really true, isn't it? There are a lot of people who are fighting to keep things alive that really make Russia a totally great country. So there's, you know, there are poets, there are writers, there are playwrights, there are theatres. There's a theatre called Theatre Doc in Moscow, which puts on shows which are documentary theatre shows. So quite often they're political in their content and they're critical about what's happening in Russian society. And they have tried to destroy Theatre Doc, and it's in its third premises now after...
Yeah, they're being kicked out all the time.
And they keep going. They're really... You know, they're real fighters, and it's mm-hmm. it's there's a real spirit of resistance.
Yeah, but
there?
It's so sad that they have to fight over these petty things. Anyway, let's read some poetry.
Some poetry. Yes.
Okay, some children's poetry first, right? Mm-hmm. Since we were talking about it, and the whole MPT magazine is devoted to it, yeah. Okay, let me see.
Oh, there's a couple of things I didn't manage to say while Marina's looking for her poems. Marina, I mentioned this at the free word, but Marina's actually the host of a really fantastic radio program called Literary First Aid Kit, which is on Radio Russia, and has a huge audience.
Has been there for 17 years. A child could have been born, grown up, and finished school.
And what's the point of the first aid kit? Why is it called first aid kit?
First aid, because poetry and prose, of course, literature, is a first aid kit. It's like a pill. It can protect you and save your life, especially if you are a teenager. And our program is aimed at senior schoolers, actually. It's mostly their mummies who listen to us. But it's aimed officially at senior schoolers. So, you see, sometimes a teenager is a person who is always under some kind of bombing, always under fire. And they need a bomb shelter badly. And a book is a bomb shelter. And we keep concocting these remedies and prescribing these prescriptions. A bit of Seishanagon, a bit of Tolstoy, several poems by Pushkin and Pasternak, and this makes up a very nice mixture for unrequited love or for feeling lonely. And that's what the program is about. And it's been on, it's only once or twice a month. A new program, once an older one is repeated, another time, and it's only once or twice a month, but it has been there for 17 years, really. Well, first grader.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is a... I know you don't... Raise your hands, whoever understands a bit of Russian. Oh, yes. Three whole people. Good. Good. So this first... We'll read it in Russian anyway, just to give you a sample of it. This is a teasing rhyme I wrote for my elder son when he went to school for the first time in his life. And now he's a grown-up guy, and he even has a little daughter. He made me a grandmother. I'm so thankful. Best thing he ever did. Yeah. But this is a teasing rhyme for his first day at school. Первоклассник, первоклассник, нарядился как на праздник, даже в лужу не зашел, погляделся и прошел. Уши вымыты до глянца, алый гриб на крышке ранца, да и сам он как грибок, из-под кепки смотрит в бок, все ли видят, все ли знают, все ли от зависти вздыхают.
First day at school. First day at school. He's dressed in his brand new shoes. A puddle blinks and winks with its eye, but he only glances in and walks quickly by. He is washed and combed, he gleams and glows, he has a new rucksack and all new clothes. And from under his hood he looks slyly round, hops like a bird in the busy playground. Will they see me? Will they see? And sigh and die of jealousy.
Тетушка Луна. Я возвращался из гостей, в потемках шел пешком. За мною тетушка Луна по небу шла бочком. Я сел в трамвай, трамвай бежал по улицам кружа. Над нами тетушка Луна скакала дребезжа. Тогда спустился я в метро, где ходят поезда. Отстала старая Луна, ей не попасть туда. Усталый прибыл я домой, вошел и в кресло плюх. В окошке полная Луна переводила дух.
Auntie Moon. I was coming home from my friend's house in the dusk, in the twilight, in the night, and old Auntie Moon was following me home, sliding through the clouds on her side. I climbed in the tram at the tram stop, and the tram went running through the streets. Above us, Auntie Moon ran on the rooftops, rattling and jangling and stopping with a screech. I went down into the metro, where all the trams run under, where all the trains run underneath the ground. But old Auntie Moon couldn't follow me there, and she got left behind. I stood panting in the doorway and threw myself flump into a chair. In the window, Auntie Moon is round and full and catching her breath and tidying her hair.
Beautiful. Sasha is such a beautiful translator.
Such a beautiful.
Лесника?
Да, Лесника. Скажи немножко.
It's just a poem about a couple of kids, maybe brothers, because I have two boys, maybe brothers, staying somewhere in the country, very far away from home.
Did it really happen? Because I was just reading it and it just seemed such a beautiful image. I'm sure you.
It's a beautiful image. Yeah, it happened to me rather than to my kids. Because mostly I used to take them to a writer's retreat to work on my Chaucer, you know. And Chaucer was my fourth. I mean, I took three boys, stepson, two sons, and Chaucer was my fourth boy. Whom I had to take care of at the writer's retreat, and I was so thankful that somebody was cooking all the time and serving meals. I mean, it seemed so, I was really grateful, I mean, and I didn't have to do that.
And where were they?
And providing clean bedclothes.
And where were they, the writer's retreats?
Writer's retreats were around, some of them were around Moscow, one was in the Baltics, one was in the Crimea. All lost by now, of course. Stolen, resold and resold, etc. And I mean, they did not belong to the government. They belonged to us writers, to our trade union, because all of them were built with our tax money. Every published line was taxed, and it went to the Lit Fund, Literary Foundation. And that's how Lit Fund, which was a millionaire agency, of course, could build these facilities. All of them lost now.
And they were like I suppose, a bit like holiday camps in a way, because they had rooms.
There were
canteens,
rooms and canteens, and some writers were allowed. Well, in some of them, children were allowed during summer holidays, at least. In some of them, children were never allowed. Like in Yalta, for instance, they were for older writers who needed peace. In the one I'm speaking about, children were allowed, but not in the main building. So all the really hard-working writers and translators with their children stayed in minor buildings, a bit on the outskirts, and there was a playground right under the windows, and the children made noise. And we really couldn't work. So someone would hang out of the window and shout, "Kids, go play at the main building." And all the kids, like a little flock of sparrows, they would up and go. Yeah, with Fedya Petrushevsky, Lyudmila Petrushevskaya's son was sort of the kids' предводитель.
Ringleader.
Ringleader, yeah, sort of ringleader. And Fedya would say, "Kids, main building." Yeah. And they, yeah. And Pastor the famous writers. So we could work, yeah. But this one was different. This one is about kids staying in the middle of nowhere.
В гостях у лесника. Здесь опускаются птицы в наш огород. Здесь поднимается небо прямо с земли. Если бы только мы жили здесь круглый год, медленнее бы говорили, быстрей росли. Здесь деловитый ежик пыхтит в углу, старый колодец цепочкою стук да бряк. Глянешь в окошко, прижмется луна к стеклу, двери откроешь, и солнце стоит в дверях.
Staying in the woodman's cabin. Here the birds fly down, right into the garden. Here the sky lifts straight up from the ground. If only we lived here the whole year round, we'd speak much slower, we'd grow far taller. Here the hedgehog grunts and noses in the corner. The old well has a chain that clinks and clanks. Look out of the window, the moon is pressing on the pane. Open the door, the sun is standing on the mat outside.
Лунный заяц, как ты думаешь? This one was just a poem I had to write because there was a blank. The design of the book, which was being republished, was being changed, and there was a blank page, and I had to write a poem, and I thought, oh, what shall I do? And I looked at the picture on the other side, and it had this fantastic, emblematic thingy with a hare or rabbit sitting in the middle of a flower, half Alice in Wonderland, half Yuda, I don't know what, drawn by my favorite book illustrator, Misha Fyodorov, with whom we've done several books together. And I just looked and looked, and I wrote a sort of emblematic poem shaped like that emblem, and I rather like it. It's called Lunny Zayats. Tick-tack, тишине. Лунный заяц на стене, на обоях, на цветке, с тонкой дудочкой в руке. Он тихонечко качается и в природе не встречается. Только здесь, на стене, в час, когда не спится мне.
And this poem is called The Moon Hare. And it's a sort of, you can't possibly translate this, but in Russian, a sun hare. Is a hare in rabbit hair, obviously, is when you know when you catch the sunlight on your clock or watch face and you can make a little sun reflection on the wall. That's called a sun hare in Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no such thing as a moon hare, but this is Marina's moon hare. The moon hare. Tick-tock, only light from the hall. The moon hare runs over the wall. On a flower he stops, a wallpaper flower, with a little thin flute and a curious call. Softly he rocks, only here on the wall and never outside, only here in my room, in the quiet and the gloom, and he pipes and peeps when I can't sleep.
Ну что, колыбельную?
Yeah.
This is a lullaby. По серебряной дорожке. This is so old, my God. Dates back to the time when my elder kid was about 3 or 4. По серебряной дорожке поплывем с тобой во сне. По серебряной дорожке приплывем с тобой к луне. Скажет ясная луна, я соскучилась одна. У меня в прохладных залах голубая тишина. Голубого молока дам для малого сынка, а для мамы для усталой у меня постель мягка. Утром солнышко придет, мёду к рынку принесёт. Ешьте, гости дорогие, золотой горячий мёд. Мы отведаем по ложке и по солнечной дорожке, по дорожке золотой поплывём к себе домой. More astronomy!
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that it? That's all of it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Sorry, this is one bit. Antonio, in the session before on Polish poetry, was talking about the things that sort of don't translate as well as the things that do translate, and there's so many in Russian and Slavic poetry, and this is one that doesn't quite translate because it's a beautiful lullaby rhythm in Russian, and it's sort of very simple. And you can write very simple lullabies in English, but when you're translating and there are the demands of the translation and what you have to get in, mm-hmm. then it's quite a lot sort of pulled together. So in the end, I'm not sure how this... I'm not sure how this worked, so I'll read it anyway and you can be the judge. Lullaby. Hush-a-bye, baby, we'll float away soon on the silver track that leads to the moon. I'm bored alone, says the bright, clear moon. My cold, round halls are quiet and blue. And blue is the milk I'll give you to taste, and soft is the bed for your mother to rest. The sun rises sunny, brings a clay pot of honey. Rise and eat, rise and taste the warm golden honey. A spoon to start the day, and we'll take the sun's track. Along a golden way, we'll float softly back.
Sounds better in English.
Oh, no.
I'm sure. It's beautiful, really.
What we thought we'd do is we'd move seamlessly on to some of Marina's more grown-up poetry. I'm not sure that that's quite right somehow, because your poetry
is poetry. It's always poetry. I keep saying there's no such thing as children's poetry, really, and grown-up poetry. Because if it's real poetry, it's written with the same stuff, with the same substance, poetic substance or poetry substance that we draw, just like a spider draws its string or thread from his tummy. That's where we take it from, because we don't have anywhere else to take it from, our own stomach, our own guts. Yeah, and it's poetry. And Valentin Berestov, who was a wonderful, really wonderful children's and, poet, just a wonderful poet, everybody's poet, and my teacher. He was the kindest person ever. He was never angry. The only thing to make him angry, the only way, was to say, oh, here comes Valentin Berestov, a children's poet. What other kinds of poets are there, he'd say. An old grandmother's poet? A female poet?
A female poet.
Yeah. As somebody... A poet is always a poet. But, of course, there are some lines, but they are quite fuzzy in a good way. In a good way. And there are poems that grown-ups write, quite grown-up poems, sometimes very grown-up, that refers to their own childhood, and which are essential, I think, to every poet alive. Yeah.
I think that's really true. And there's a couple of years ago, actually, Martin Amis said, I think, in an interview, that children's poetry, or children's writing, actually, he was talking about children's prose, was he kind of implied that it was written by people who couldn't quite manage writing for grown-ups, which seems to me exactly the wrong way around. I think, actually, that you only write children's work for children if you're absolutely at the top of your game, because children are the best critics of literature, and they just see through everything. And when I read translations to my kids, they see through it momentarily, and they read poetry in a very different but absolutely piercing way. There's no mucking around with them. There's no kind of pretension or I should get that, I should understand that. What they want is the essence, really, of poetry. And if you can write for children, I think you can just about write for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very essential form, which is one of the reasons that we wanted to do this modern poetry in translation for children's poetry from around the world, because this year is the 50th anniversary of modern poetry in translation, which was set up in 1965 by Ted Hughes and Danny Weisbord. And it seemed utterly appropriate that we start the 50th anniversary year with a focus on poetry for the readers of the next 50 years. Mm-hmm. And the best readers are always under 4 foot. Shall we go for some grown-up mm-hmm. poetry? Oh, I got confused. Which one is it?
Let me see, President. Yeah, they come, I think they come straight after the... I printed them out for you. Where are they?
Are they here?
Mm-mm.
No.
Let me see. Okay, just a second. I think I gave them to you, and here
yes,
they are.
And here they are.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Whatever. Which you start. You tell me whichever one you want to start with. Sorry.
We'll start with a dream.
The dream. Okay, my favorite one. I don't even have to look in the paper. The dream. Сон. Пред небесной медкомиссией стоит мой жалкий дух. Зрение дрянь, неважно с мышцами, на троечку слух. Голый, взвешенный, измеренный, дурак дураком. На него глядит сощуренный архангел военком. Сам воинственный, таинственный, святой Михаил задает вопрос единственный. Усердно ль служил? Я старался всеми силами, дудел, пробуждал. Гавриила вон спросили бы, награды не ждал. Ты слонялся, ты повесничал, глазел в облака, лег, дрых на травке, лоботрясничал, валял дурака. Высоты не взял завещанной, не отнял у тьмы. Ты опять проснешься с женщиной в начале зимы.
And this poem has a medical board in it, and that's the medical board that conscripts would go in front of, isn't it? As they when they were taken up into the army.
Yeah, you have to pass the medical board.
There's a sort of medical inspection, so you have to imagine that. A dream. My poor spirit stands before the heavenly medical board. Sight, shit. Muscle tone, slight. Hearing, flawed. Naked, weighed and measured, a trembling fool, upon whom the narrowed eyes of the recruiting archangel fall. The mysterious, the glorious St. Michael, the battle-scarred, asks only one question. Soldier, did you fight your hardest? Well, I put my best foot forward. I piped my pipe. I woke men's hearts. And I never expected any reward. Ask Gabriel there. He'll take my part. You wandered in a haze. You sprawled and lazed. You mucked about, dozed in the sun, half dazed, cloud gazed. Those heights you were to gain from the dark, they were beyond you. You will wake as a woman again, with winter upon you.
Good job, Sasha. Okay, whichever.
Exodus.
Exodus. Okay. Yeah. Исход. Я вот думаю, как они шли по морскому дну, когда хлябь расчесали для них на прямой пробор. Под ногами чавкало, и с двух сторон в вышину уходили стены, сплошной водяной коридор. Малыши на руках, а постарше-то ребятня, отставала, небось, кричала: «Смотри, смотри!» И нельзя же было мимо пройти, не подняв хоть одну ракушку розовую внутри. А какие чудища встречались им на пути! А какие щупальца тянулись из толщи стен! И не все понимали, зачем им туда идти, и не все вспоминали, что сзади погоня и плен. А когда ударила в бубен пророчица Мариам, и морские стены с грохотом вновь сойдясь раздавили коней, расплющили египтян. Содрогнулись они или сразу пустились в пляс?
Exodus. So I was wondering how they crossed that seabed when the whole watery firmament was combed, wave to floor, and the squelch, 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 and the walls on either side going up and up like a great aquatic corridor. The babies were carried. The older children, I'm sure, fell behind, shouting, "Look, look what I found!" Was it really possible to walk the watery course without stopping once to lift a shell's pink round? What wonders they must have seen on that bed, the tentacles that jutted from the walls like booms. And yet, not all of them knew why they had fled. nor remembered that behind them lay their doom. And when the prophet Mariam beat on her tambour, and the sea walls bent, and with a tidal roar crushed the Egyptians, their horses swept, destroyed, did they shudder even briefly before they danced for joy?
Дерево.
This is a poem about your childhood, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is it. It has a certain prison song ringing in it. But even though the English ear can't discern it, but still. Есть дерево, не знаю, как зовут, но что-то в женском роде, как бы проза в подвесках поэтических причуд, блатной романс, японская береза. У ней такая медная кора, она росла на даче у подружки, там на участке, словно бы вчера, мы делали шалаш из раскладушки, и мальчик по-индейски меднокож сливался с ней, обхватывал ногами и плавно подымался, так что дрожь по всем соседним кронам шла кругами. 14-м летом налегке мы велики пасли, согнав к оврагу, трещал приемник, где-то вдалеке незримые вползали танки в Прагу, и к той древесной гладкости прильнуть и уловить земное сотрясание мешала только маленькая грудь, болевшая от всякого касания. Есть дерево, не знаю, как зовут, но все оно, как смуглая прохлада, как первых стыдных мыслей детский зуд осталось в глубине чужого сада. И если этот ствол давно исчез, оставив по себе пенек надгробный, я мысленно целую круглый срез со всей историей внутри утробной.
It's a marvelous poem, and it's quite upsetting, actually. It's an upsetting poem, but it's as Marina said, it's written in a sort of meter, of a song meter, and in Russian, this memory of a prison, sort of, you know, a prisoner's song and ballad.
Which were quite merry sometimes, about some девушка из Нагасаки, a girl from Nagasaki, she had small breasts under a silk blouse, you know.
And then the reality of the poem is completely at odds with that. It's really extraordinary. 1967, is that right?
68. It's
1968. Mm-hmm. Soviet invasion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There is a tree, its name escapes me. A prose-like name, it flirts with poetry, wears poetic oddity. Song of a prison yard, a Japanese birch tree. Its slender trunk wore bark of bronze. It grew in my friend's garden, where on days that seemed barely gone, we made hideaways of folding chairs. And a boy, bronze-skinned as an Indian, vanished as he clutched the tree and swarmed upwards, sending a circle trembling through the canopy. 14 years old and travelling light, at the ravine we grazed our herd of bikes, the radio hissed, and somewhere very far, invisible tanks slid into Prague. But for tender little breasts, at the least touch aching, we'd have pressed ourselves to the smooth bark and caught the earth quaking. There is a tree, its name escapes me, and yet, like a chill dark shadow, like a child's first shameful thoughts, it lies deep in a stranger's meadow. And if that tree was felled long ago, leaving only a trace of sap on its tomb, then I kiss in my dreams the rings cut through and all their history in wound.
Okay, which one?
I think we should...
Christmas or...
I was wondering, there's one poem by Marina. I think we should leave a little bit of time for some questions.
We'll have 10 minutes for questions for you.
There's a new book of Russian poetry that came out this year, edited by Robert Chandler and Irina Marshinsky, and it's the Penguin Book of Russian Verse. And in fact, it only goes up to, I think, 1970s, doesn't it? It's quite a sort of, I mean, it's a historical span. And there are hardly any writers in it from after that period. And one of the very few writers that Robert and Irina chose to include is Marina. And they've got one of Marina's poems in translation by the poet Ruth Fainlight. And I thought it might be nice to perhaps finish the reading with that poem, because it's a beautiful poem, and Ruth's translation is really superb. And what do you think? Do you think that would
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, if you say so. Ruth would have been delighted if she were here. Yeah, okay. So I have to find Cordelia
there
for
it
you,
is,
right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Cordelia.
Yeah. And I have to find it in Russian too. Just in case. Of course I remember it. Of course I do. But just in case. Uh-huh. Okay. It has to do with English literature directly, so maybe it's a very good idea to finish with it. Корделия, ты дура. Неужели так трудно было старику поддаться, сказать ему, я тоже, милый папа, люблю вас больше жизни, всех-то дел. Хотела, чтобы сам он догадался, кто лучшая из дочерей. Гордячка. Теперь он мертв, ты тоже, все мертвы. А Глостер, о, кровавый ужас детства, его глазницы, сцена ослепления, как будто раскаленное железо пролистывали пальцы, торопясь. На вот, прочти, я отвернусь, тебя же в том акте не было? Читай, читай, смотри, что ты наделала, дуреха. Ну ладно, не реви. Конечно, автор, тот фрукт еще, но в следующий раз... Ты своевольничай, сопротивляйся. Виола, Розалинда, Катарина смогли, а ты чем хуже? Как щенок, тяни его зубами за штанину. В игру, в комедию законы жанра нас выведут на свет. На, вытри нос, давай сюда платок. Его должна я перестирать, прогладить и вернуть одной венецианской растеряхе в соседний том. Прости, что накричала. Отцу привет, и помни, как щенок.
So this is Ruth Fainlight's translation. Cordelia, you are a fool. Would it have been that hard to yield to the old man? To say to him, I too, oh darling daddy, love you more than my life. Piece of cake. You wanted him to work it out on his own. Who was the best of his daughters, proud fool? And now he's dead, you too, everyone's dead, and Gloucester. Oh, the bloody horror. His eye sockets, the scene of the blinding. Fingers leafing quickly through the pages as if through plates of red-hot iron. Here, read it now. I'll turn away. You weren't there in that act, were you? Go on, read it. Look what you've done, you stupid little fool. Okay, okay, don't cry. Of course, the author is quite a character. But next time, make sure to be more stubborn and resist. Viola, Rosalinda, Catherine, they managed. Why wouldn't you? Like a puppy, pull him by the leg of his pants with your teeth into the game, into comedy. The laws of the genre will lead us out to light. Here, wipe your nose and give me back the hanky. I still have to wash and iron and return it to a certain careless blonde Venetian in the next volume. Sorry I told you off. Best regards to your father. Remember, like a puppy. Great. Does anyone have any questions?
You asking me?
Yes.
If I could do anything about it, there would, but no, not really. Well, some of it has been published in monthlies and magazines, but no book at the horizon even.
I really love to do a book of Marina's poetry, and I'd like to do it, but I think the problem with Marina's poetry for me is that I can't translate it fast, because it's so balladic and lyrical and song-like. And that does change how you translate. I know you know you probably you can't go, right, I've got 6 months, I'm going to translate 436 poems. It just doesn't work. Like, it has to be a moment of, not, I mean, I don't know, inspiration, but the right mood. And so sort of, it'd be lovely
don't
to
hurry,
do,
dear.
But it would be...
Don't hurry, don't hurry. Take all the time you want. If it is to be, it will be.
Mm-hmm. I hope it is. I hope it is.
Well.
Yes.
I think it's rather worse, because in America, we all know, in America, of course, a certain religious group from Texas, for instance, parents from Texas, yeah, could say, we want this book banned, we want that book banned, but the government would react in a very predictable manner. We can't please all the religious groups, and America is a multinational and multi-confessional country. But in Russia, a very different thing happens. The government says, oh, all right, if you say so. Because, of course, the Russian Orthodox is the leading religion, and some animals are more equal. Of course, all the animals are equal, but some animals are always more equal than other animals, you know. So it's rather worse. America's protected from it.
No, the
present regime is used by the church.
The other way around.
Yeah, rather. But of course, they are like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. But mostly, of course, the church uses the regime to get back all it lost, presumably, and 1,000 times more. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm already contemporary Russian children's publishers buying in or publishing any British or Western children's poetry over there in translation?
In translation, well, it's not so good with poetry, but yes, well, yes. British literature has always been popular in Russia, even before the revolution, and now too. So. It can rest in peace. It will always be popular in Russia. And many books are translated, stories, school stories by Anne Fine, for instance, are constantly translated into Russian. Harry Potter is the Russian national hero. Yeah. And, you know, things like that are going on. So English books are translated. Poetic, grown-up poetry isn't that popular, unfortunately. Isn't that well translated. But you have to consider the issue of the rights. Of the, mm-hmm. Как это называется?
Yes, copyright.
Copyrights. No editor wants to deal with copyrights because it's so, even if it's not expensive, as it is in some cases, it's so complicated. When I was compiling a book of children's poetry, my editor almost went crazy. I had to say, okay, take it out from my royalties, from anywhere, but pay for the rights, because we had to locate rights for every single poem by Eleanor Forgeon, and the rights for one poem belonged to her cousin, and the rights to another poem to somebody twice removed, that she gave it, left it as a heritage or something, inherited them. And anyway, it was completely crazy, and it's very dangerous not to buy the rights anymore. I mean, the Soviet power, they just ignored the copyrights. And guys, it was a happy time. I'm telling you, I could publish all the wonderful British poems that I wanted and make millions of Russian children very glad and happy. Now I have to... Spike Milligan, no! Copyrights!
You know, Shel Silverstein, no way, copyrights, you know. The publisher wouldn't do it.
There's a very sort of dark period between the author being alive, and you could always talk to the author and explain, and usually you can come to some sort of...
I could talk to Michael Rosen, then he would have to take the matter to his agent. I would love to do a book by Michael Rosen, but I'm afraid the publisher will say, oh, no way, I don't deal with his agent. Well, some books which are sure to be sold and sure to make a profit for a publisher, like Julia Donaldson, they buy the rights for. And I've done 14 books by Julia Donaldson by now, and almost through my 15th.
Oh, we did promise, just to finish off quickly, we did promise to reveal what the Russian name for the Gruffalo was, or nearly was.
Oh, did we promise that?
We promised that in the blur.
Yes, yeah. Right. I did the Gruffalo, I did the whole of it. First, with him, the main character named Grizzlodil, which is a very nice name, a combination of claws, evil, or mean, or evil, zlo, and crocodile. A very nice combination. But then they said Gruffalo is a world-known trend, brand, whatever, so you have to leave the name. And I said, oh my God, it doesn't rhyme with anything. Because Grizzlodil rhymes beautifully with all the verbs in the past. Приходил, проглотил, you know, Antonio, of course. Yeah. And doesn't rhyme with anything. And then Grisha Krushkov, a colleague of mine, he said, okay, let's think of a funny rhyme, which doesn't really exist. And he helped me think of the rhyme, «Ой, мама, это груфало, оно меня понюфало». Yeah. And it was so funny that every child just loved it. And when I was doing, «Oh, mommy, it's the gruffalo», and it approached me and made a snuffalo, something like that. So I had to invent another line.
Snuffalo.
And made a terrible snuffalo. Yeah. And I had to invent another verb, like non-existing verb like that, to rhyme with the gruffalo when I was doing the gruffalo's child. Здесь пробегало груфало, оно порядком струфало. There was a gruffalo, here passed a gruffalo, and it got terribly carduffalo.
That's great.
Yeah. Or scaredaffalo. Yeah. And now if she writes a third gruffalo book, I'll have to think of a third one.
Thank you so much, Marina. That was wonderful.
Thank you for coming. Really in the sun and the rain. Так, нас кто-нибудь сфотографировал?
О, да.
Pictures.